Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about athleticism and exercise. This is a real privilege for me because today we're going to interview an individual who I consider a real role model and a source of personal inspiration throughout my career as a senior athlete. I've competed in triathlons, and I'm an inveterate biker, swimmer, and runner. And the guidance that this individual has provided me personally has been invaluable. We're talking to one of the top experts in the field of exercise physiology, really a legend, Joe Friel, who has trained endurance athletes since 1980. He has clients who are elite and amateur, road cyclists, mountain bikers, triathletes, duathletes, and they come from all corners of the globe and include national champions, world champion competitors, and even an Olympian. And he's the author of 10 books on training for endurance athletes, including the popular and best-selling Training Bible book series. He possesses a master's degree in exercise science. He's a USA Triathlon and USA Cycling certified elite-level coach and a founder of the past chairman of the USA Triathlon National Coaching Commission. So he's big in the world of triathletes. He conducts seminars across the world, writes lectures, and he is himself. He walks the walk because as a senior athlete, he is very, very dedicated to his own personal training regimen. So he uses his own body as kind of a living laboratory for his principles. So it's with great pleasure that I introduce our guest, Joe Friel. And Joe, we want to focus on your latest book, but you've written a lot of books. The book that we want to talk about is Fast After 50, which is particularly relevant.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the kind intro, Ron. Yeah, that's my most recent book. And actually, we can probably update how many books I've done. I think I'm now working on book number 15. So,
oh, indeed.
This list just keeps getting longer all the time.
And one of the books that I think is a very important book, and we'll talk a little bit about it, is The Paleo Diet for Athletes, which you co-wrote with the originator of the paleo diet, Dr. Lauren Cordain. So I think that's an important one because it kind of pushes back against that carbo-loading notion that for so long has been the paradigm for diet for many elite athletes. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. But in the book Fast After 50, you seek to demolish the aging myth. You say that physiologic aging can be kind of pushed back via exercise. What's the difference between normal aging versus athletic aging?
Well, it really comes down to the rate of aging, the rate at which endurance performance, athletic performance is lost. We're basically led to believe that we can expect all sorts of bad things to happen at a very rapid rate once we turn age 50. And it's not that the scientists who have expressed these concerns are lying. That's what they found when working with what I would call normal, eating, non-athletic, overweight, eat poor diet, never do anything to improve their physical condition except sitting in front of a television eating potato chips. That's what we consider to be normal people in this country anymore for such studies. And so the research has shown that those people, a little bit of fitness they have at a very rapid rate, compared with people who stay very active in their lives by training for endurance sports. So that's what the book is about. How can we slow down that decline in performance with aging?
And so let's talk a little bit about just the foundation of this is why do it? You really see exercise as a form of medicine. You know, you can't get it in a pill, so you have to undertake an exercise program to garner the benefits. What are some of the benefits that accrue?
Yeah, the primary benefits that accrue are number one, two things in very, very general terms. Number one, the quality of life improves. I think all athletes know this. If you're very active, the quality of your life is much greater than your inactive neighbor who's the same age or same rough age as you are. typically endurance athletes or serious athletes, even if they're over the age of 50, are far younger physiologically than their inactive neighbors are. So that's the first thing that happens because of dedication to strenuous exercise, vigorous exercise as we get older. The second thing is that research has shown us is that basically you can expect to live longer if you're fitter than the average population is. So it's not only the quality of life, it's also the quantity of life that are improved by remaining very active.
Okay, and there's a debate about, and you see this constantly, I know this probably drives you crazy, is you see these studies that come out that say you need to do a lot of exercise to garner the benefits, on the one hand. And another study saying, nah, you know, you can just kind of, you know, walk a couple of miles every day. And that's fine. You garner the vast majority of the benefits from just moderate exercise. You, however, are an advocate of, you know, fairly high-intensity exercise.
Well, my people, I wrote that book we're talking about, Fast After 50. The people I wrote it for are athletes. They're not people who are walking around the block and considering that to be a hard workout. These are folks who are doing triathlons and bike races and running races, and they're very, very active well into their, not only age 50, but 60s, 70s, even in their 80s, are still very, very active people. So I was writing for those folks and discussing how they can maintain their performances as they get older, because they're the ones who are most concerned about this. The other person, the inactive person who walks around the block occasionally, that person is not nearly as concerned and expects all sorts of things to happen to themselves as they get older, very bad things. And that's a different category of animal altogether than who I was writing the book for.
Indeed. So you're focusing on high-end exercisers like yourself. And full disclosure, mind sharing your personal age?
Sure. I'll be 72 years old in what? Let's see what the day is. In about 10 days, I'll be 72 years old.
Well, Merry Christmas and happy birthday to you. You're born on,
you.
I guess that's kind of a bummer because, you know, all the presents have to be given all at once instead
right.
of separately. But that happens to December babies.
I'm used to it.
yeah, after this amount of time. So, you know, I personally am 63, and I have to say that, you know, I continue at a very high level of athletic performance. I'm not giving up the ghost, and I don't even really expect, you know, much in the way of decline. I actually had some of my best, my personal bests in the triathlon in my, you know, at 58. I think it was actually a race that I won, which was a personal best at that age. Of course, it was not, I wasn't the overall winner of the race. I was an age, we have age categories. So kind of the longer you stay in the game, the more, you know, the field winnows down and you're more likely to win if you just stay in there. And if you're a centenarian, you're going to win every event just by showing up.
That's sure.
That does help. Okay, so but then let's push back on this notion. There has been a bit of a buzz lately about, you know, the downsides of heavy duty exercise. You know, ultra marathoners, Ironman triathletes. There have been stories of heart problems associated with that. The potential for
sure.
Downsides to excess exercise. So address that, please.
Yeah, there has been recently quite a bit of talk about that, which is very interesting. You know, I'm still watching to see where this goes. We really don't know the answers yet. There apparently is some concern that exercise training may cause a remodeling, if you will, of the heart muscles. Essentially, that means the heart muscles get bigger, and therefore there's more space between nerve endings and so forth. And this may be resulting in an irregular, or rather a high heart rate, much higher than what the athlete should typically experience during exercise, even during rest sometimes. Interesting thing is, we know this happens to about 5% of the general population, not athletes now, but general population. And we really don't know exactly how many athletes are experiencing this. It could be that it's 5%. Again, we just may simply be seeing the people who would have had this mm-hmm. happen to them regardless of whether they were athletes or not, simply because they happen to fall in that genetic 5% that's inherited the proclivity to have this happen.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't know the answer to. We don't. There's lots of things we don't know right now. So still learning.
So it's hard really to conduct that kind of study to compare, you know, the obviously sedentary bad, we know that. Moderate exercise, you know, everybody seems to line up behind that to a greater extent. The whole controversy is whether to go that extra mile to do a very intensive training regimen. So please share with me, in our prelude, you know, just before we got on the air, you said it's cold out where you live. Paradoxically, here it's warm in New York, and you said it was cold when you took your morning run. What is your training regimen? Are you mostly run, or do you diversify your training?
Actually, I'm a cyclist. I was talking about my ride this morning.
Oh, you ride. Okay. That's even colder, because once you get up that speed, that airspeed, you know, that adds a few degrees of cold.
Yeah, if you're going down a hill at 40 miles per hour and it's 35 degrees out, you know it's cold. So
yeah,
that was my experience this morning, 35 degrees. And so it's that's very unusual for – I live in the Phoenix area. Very, very unusual for that to happen to us. That usually happens like once a winter. And so far we've had – I think this is the third day in a row we've had temperatures below freezing at night. So extremely unusual. Hopefully the next 2 days is supposed to get back to normal temperatures, which means highs in the 70s instead of highs in the low 50s, which is what we are now.
So for a listening audience, what you know, you're going on 72, and what type of mileage do you do on your bicycle, and you know what? How many hours do you devote to training a week?
Well, my training depends a lot on my travel. I do a lot of presentations.
Right.
I train mostly coaches, and so do a lot of travel. I just got back from Colorado last week, and the week before that I was in England. The week before that I was in Texas. And so it's kind of like that all the time. So when I'm gone, very little happens. There's not a lot of time mm-hmm. left to get in a workout. Carrying bikes around the world is not the easiest thing to do. So I try to find, if I can, on those trips, I try to find stationary bikes at hotel, mm-hmm. recreational areas that I can work out on. But when I'm home, I typically do roughly around 15 hours a week, which amounts to something like about 220 to 250 miles per week.
Wow.
And so I try to get in as much as I can, because I know in the next few days I'm going to go someplace and it's going to cut into my training again. So I try to optimize or maximize even my
and you're making apologies for the fact that you're too busy to exercise as much as you would if you had your druthers and you were just staying in one place. So that's pretty impressive. So Coach Friel, you have been a proponent of what is termed the anaerobic threshold. You're pursuing that, training into that anaerobic zone, where in effect you're sort of gassed. You're not just aerobic, where you get an adequate oxygen. You actually go a little bit into the red zone in terms of training. Is this something that is appropriate for athletes over 50, and does it help develop endurance?
Yes, I think it is appropriate for most all athletes. It always comes down to who are we talking about. As you know, when we start talking about such things as the details of how to train, in the book I propose that that sort of training has got great benefits to it. And I go through the research that supports this and shows how it slows the aging process, which I'm talking now about the loss of performance over time. And so training this way does help to slow that, even perhaps for a short time, even reverse it, so that when athletes first start training this way, they can reverse the losses and actually gain performance, gain VO2 max in the short term. But eventually age will catch up with them again. It's how long depends on a number of factors before that occurs. But is it right for everyone to do this? I think to some extent, if we're talking about serious endurance athletes over the age of 50, I would say yes, it probably is. It just comes down to two things. And those two things are what's called dose and density in sports science. Dose is how hard is the workout. In other words, how many, let's say intervals, how many intervals do you do in a single workout? You can do one interval or you can do a dozen intervals. They can be 30 seconds long or they can be 3 minutes long. So there's lots of variables you can play with there to change the dose. And I would suggest that athletes who have not been training this way, not been doing interval training above their anaerobic threshold, that they start with a very, very low dose. It may be something like 2 times 30 seconds with a 30-second recovery between them, and then that's the end of the workout. Essentially, warm up, do that, cool down. That's the workout. The other part of the equation is density, which is how often these hard workouts occur. And some athletes could do a workout like 5 times 3 minutes, and they could do that 3 times a week. Once for triathlete, might be able to do once in each sport in a week's time. Other athletes could not handle that because they're just it's beyond their potential, beyond their capabilities of being able to do that much training. So they can do maybe one of those workouts in a week. And then the issue is, how fast do we progress? How fast does the athlete increase the dose? How fast do they increase the density? And that's where the problem is. Most athletes become overly they lose their patience. They try to get it done too quickly. They think they can force their body to become fit immediately. So those are the issues that have to be determined. And I realize everybody's not a sports scientist, but it's really not that difficult to do if you keep it easy when you first start, and then gradually and very patiently allow your body to catch up with what you're trying to do to it.
Okay, so Coach Phil, when we try to gauge our performance, because you know you can do it subjectively, you can assume that you know I'm going near maximal, sub maximal. You know, it's kind of how gassed do you feel? But do you use precision instruments like pulse meters or power meters sometimes with your athletes to determine how much exertion is actually occurring?
Yeah, good question. There's several ways of doing this. Let me start off by saying that we're talking about intervals which are quite brief. They're typically less than 3 minutes long. And heart rate monitors don't work very well for that sort of interval. The heart is very slow to respond to increases in intensity. So it's really not a very good tool to use. On a bicycle, by far the best tool is a power meter, but they're kind of expensive. We're talking probably in the neighborhood of $800 to have one installed on a bicycle, much more expensive than a heart rate monitor. Although the prices are coming down, I expect in a couple of years we'll be buying them for less than $400. Mm-hmm. Running, probably the best thing we could do is just use a GPS device, a speed and distance watch device, mm-hmm. that shows how fast the athlete is running. Or a runner could simply go to a track, and with a little bit of math, they can figure out how fast they should be running the 200s as they're marked on the 400 meter track. Mm-hmm. To achieve the high enough intensity, and if all
these are what used to be termed fartleks. It's not a very appetizing term, but you know, I guess it's a Finnish word or a Scandinavian word. It would mean basically wind sprints that gas you, right?
Yeah, I mean speed play in that case. So you don't really have any parameters, set parameters for the workout. You just speed up when you feel like it, and you slow down when you feel like it, and you run as fast as you feel like running, or you run as easy as you feel like running. So it's just play is all it is. Mm-hmm. What I'm proposing here, and then that works fine for what I'm talking about with this type of workout, but if the athlete is doing a more structured workout, that's where something like a heart rate monitor or power meter or speed and distance device can help. But lacking that, the thing an athlete can probably use, which is just as effective once they've got the hang of it, is what's called rating of perceived exertion. In other words, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard does this feel? And when you're doing intervals like I'm talking about, it should feel like it's about an 8 or a 9 on a 10 scale, 10 being the highest. And so it's a pretty hard effort with a very, very easy recovery, mm-hmm. you know, like a 2 or 3 effort recovery between those high efforts.
And you detail how to do that in the book, the most recent book, Fast After 50.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Great. All right. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. But in part two, when we return to our conversation, I want to focus on the very, very important issue of diet and nutrition. And you have taken a special interest in that in collaborating with Dr. Lauren Cordain, the originator of the paleo diet, to introduce the notion that the paleo diet might be a suitable prescription for many athletes, even elite athletes. And we'll see how what your experience is in coaching athletes who've undertaken that program in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Joe Friel, author of Fast After 50, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.